Hey guys, if you want updates on our latest episodes, then be sure to subscribe to the Film Colossus podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Also, if you'd like to support the show and hear episodes ad-free, then subscribe to our Patreon page at patreon.com/filmcolossus.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
My name's Chris Lambert.
And my name is Travis Bean.
Welcome to Film Colossus,
your guide to movies.
You, the one with that smile, yeah. Come over here for a while. Hey, girl, do you hear what I say? I don't have time to be waiting on Just believe that it's not all so wrong.
Wow, what an entrance.
I know, really trying to bring the energy, but not bring language into it.
Right. You don't want to scare him off.
No, of course not. You want to be normal. Act normal. Just
absolutely.
Be normal, Travis.
And while we're on the topic of being completely, utterly normal, I would like to now talk through Patrick Swayze's entire filmography.
It's the most normal thing you could have mentioned and brought up.
We'll start at the beginning, I'm guessing like The Outsiders or something, and go to the end, which... he had to do some movie after Donnie Darko, right?
Yeah, I'm surprised you don't know this. I'm like, you're asking me.
I'm feigning ignorance. Of course I know every movie in order.
Of course. Other natural things, the movie that we're talking about today, The Wailing, lots of normal, natural, common occurrences.
Yeah, I mean, just the other day, I had to fight off a zombie, and I just... threw a hoe in the back of its head. Is that what they put in his head? A hoe?
Yeah.
So this was like Sunday morning for me.
Oh, yeah, nice and normal. I went fishing, you know. Then that was fine.
Yeah. But and you caught something. You didn't know what you were going to catch, but you did catch it.
That is very true. And then I was walking back to my car. I tripped and fell and looked over and somebody was eating my fish.
And then you tripped and fell like 8 more times.
Yeah, there's so much tripping and falling.
It's a fantastic motif in this movie.
You think you have your footing under you, you know? You think you can just walk in a direction, but yeah. No.
This movie, every choice this movie makes is perfect to the T.
So The Wailing. Yeah, this is one that came to our attention. We were looking up movies that we should write about. And one that kept coming up was The Wailing, Gok Seong. And I didn't think much of it for a little bit, but after seeing it make so many lists and kind of be mentioned again and again, and
yeah,
the word like wailing is also very uncommon. There's something kind of alluring about it.
My daughter constantly wails, so it's become every day for me.
Yeah, it's normal. Again, normal, this movie. Very normal part of day-to-day life. I remember we watched it, and I had no idea what to expect. I had it watched a trailer, had it prepared in any way, shape, or form. I guess that it was a horror movie based on that title. But I had no idea what to expect, and I hadn't watched any of Na Hong Jin's other films before this, The Chaser, The Yellow Sea. So I think the last like South Korean movie I had watched before this was like the Toronto International Film Festival that we went to in like 2015, and we saw Cold Eyes. Was that 2013 or 2014?
I believe that was 2013.
Cold Eyes was fantastic. Yeah. So like South Korean cinema is something that I've been wanting to dive into a bit more. And I know they have a pretty rich like horror section. So The Wailing was just something that was another reminder that like South Korea has something special going on in its film industry.
Yeah, they have a, I guess the commonality I've noticed anyway. I too have limited experience with their cinema, but very slow burn. A lot of like steeping in the imagery of like the mountains and the nature and just kind of like the wide vastness there. And it's a lot of people kind of like, I feel like it evokes a feeling of seclusion, of isolation, of like trying to figure out life in the world when like you feel so separated and everything feels so spacious. It's a very unique tone that a lot of the movies I've noted, that I've seen anyway, have.
Yeah. I mean, I mentioned that it was the only one I watched between Cold Eyes. That's not true. I had watched Old Boy and The Handmaiden.
Oh yeah.
And The Handmaiden, like everything you're talking about, like slow burn, like The Handmaiden was, I mean, Old Boy of course is like a classic, but The Handmaiden was one of the best movies I think I watched in the last decade.
Nice. Have you seen Burning?
I have not seen Burning.
It's a good one. I think we should write about that one actually.
Okay. That sounds good to me.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely.
But it's similar there. Like, it's just somebody kind of like meandering, wandering, like a coming of age movie, someone who's trying to figure out life when everything just feels so unreachable, you know?
Mm. Poignant.
Yeah.
I've never watched Snowpiercer either.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I saw that back when it came out.
Hmm. I need to catch that at some point. I remember starting it like right after it hit streaming or HBO or something, and not getting into the first few minutes and being like, I'll come back to this. And then it's been a decade.
You'll pick up right where you left off.
Yeah. Just the opening scene. Not too difficult. I don't know, had you heard of The Wailing prior to us?
I think my experience was the same as yours. Like, we heard about it as we just kept researching what movies we should cover. And you really realized this movie had a big cult following. It was the kind of movie that had like 100 Reddit posts made about it. Like, people asking like, what was this? What did this mean? Like, why was this happening? So it seemed pretty prime for what we do. Maybe more specifically what Chris does. I think you really like delving into these mystery movies. It reminds me of Prisoners actually a lot. How there's like this overarching mystery going on, and you're not sure like who to believe or who to trust, like who's doing the right thing or the wrong thing. And those movies kind of naturally ask for audience participation. Like, you're kind of there alongside the characters as they make decisions, and you're kind of wondering if they're making the right or wrong decisions. I enjoy those kinds of movies. So like, I, in knowing that this movie was a mystery and like, hey, a zombie movie, I'm way into that. I guess kind of zombie movie, maybe like Evil Spirits, I guess is more accurate. But on paper, it had all the makings of something I would enjoy for sure.
Yeah. Then I mean, when I watched it, it kind of blew me away. Like, I just remember, I don't think I'd seen a horror movie that was such a mix of comedy and just like serious drama in the way that it like gets to. Like, there's so many funny parts throughout this movie that are kind of like dopey, unintentional humor rather than, I think, some of the more like, of course, you know, you have the pointed humor in something like Scary Movie, which is just like over the top and doesn't really have a scary factor to it, even though it's in the horror genre, technically. I guess it's a spoof genre, but the comedy in this is just so consistent and really disarms you to some of the increasing tension of the characters and what they're facing and really like where we get to by the end of this movie, that it's just so impressive to me that by the end, when like Jang-gu is like having to make this decision about whether he trusts the woman in white or he trusts the shaman, it's just, you completely forget about the humorous moments that have been building up through it.
It takes like, a turn.
Yeah, I don't. And it's like, you can see that energy coming. Like, it's just like step after step after step as each minute passes by, you can feel the tension increasing.
Yeah.
But Jang-gu is like so humorous throughout and so kind of like naive to it for the first like hour and a half, that by the time it really does take that turn,
I agree about the overall tenor of the movie. Like, I definitely like a movie that has it all, that can like mix in humor and flair with debilitatingly grim setting. And it's mostly, I would say it's mostly in the beginning, the humor's there. It's like a really nice flow that it has with Jang-gu and like his police partner and like the banter they have. But then eventually when the shaman comes in, like, I think that guy kind of steals the show in this movie. Like, he's my guy. And I do like his sort of like, he's got this very like witty, sarcastic tone. And eventually, and after you find out like who he is, that he's a bad guy working with the evil spirit, like, like, damn, that guy is, he's basically just rubbing it in people's faces. Like, he just, he's so much better than them, and it's just constantly manipulating them. But yeah, there is a nice balance of all that throughout. But it does, the humor definitely, like, alleviates at some point. It becomes a very grim movie. And, like, you're just watching Jang-gu, like, not know what to do. And I will say that, as much as I like the balance that the movie has, I think the movie kind of picks up in the second half, maybe even in the last like 45 minutes.
Yeah.
When Jang-gu's really like back against the wall, he's got to figure out what the hell's going on to save his daughter. There is a certain urgency to the movie that it gains that I thought was welcome, that maybe could have been used throughout a little bit more.
The urgency that does come in, especially like you compare it to the opening scene, where, not the opening scene, but our introduction to Jang-gu, when they call him and it's still dark outside and they're like, hey, there's been this murder. You need to come down here because, you know, you're a sergeant, like, come down and be part of this. And he's like, okay. And then by the time we see him like dressed and ready to go, like, the sun's coming up, it's dawn. The sun's not like fully out yet, but it's like the silver of early morning. Much different than when he was initially called. And then he stops and eats. And by the time he finally gets to the crime scene, like, so much time has passed that it kind of gives this impression. It's one, just like great characterization of him and a little like how out of sorts he is and maybe how like incapable he's going to be of dealing with this thing. And I love the fact, too, that over the course of the movie, we see him gain in confidence, in that urgency, in the capacity, to where we think, like, oh, you know, maybe he's going to make the right decision. Maybe he's going to figure this out. And then he ultimately panics and makes the wrong decision. I mean, which we'll get into, I'm sure, about the debate of whether or not he actually could have done anything at the end.
We're going to debate hard, too.
it's that thing of the choice he makes was set up from that earlier part of him being like a little lazy, a little like not detail oriented, a little just like out of sorts, that it was kind of a fatal flaw that we see from the very beginning. And it's a thing that comes back to bite him even after he had been so like go, go, go and getting it together.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like, the character work in the movie is really, really good. Like, everybody is so clearly outlined and defined, especially Jang-gu, as you're describing. Like, you kind of fully understand who he is and what kind of person is being thrust into a situation that would make anyone shit their pants, let alone somebody who's like a bumbling fool who never really took his job seriously. And to see him like gain confidence, gain bravery, to finally see him like he's forced to gain some character throughout the movie. Like he could have coasted the rest of his life just, you know, being who he was, but like this situation kind of forces him in another direction. But as you've noted, it doesn't necessarily mean he makes the right decision in the end. In the end, he's still a human being who makes the wrong decision. So to watch someone go through that, that's not something I think a lot of movies could handle. Like, I think this movie does a really good job of keeping us aware of the kind of character he is. And by the time he does make the wrong decision, like, it does make sense. Like, you do see that guy that was like thrust into the situation and panicked and didn't quite know what to do. It's an interesting take on a character. I think we're used to just seeing like heroes who always make the right decision and like do the right thing in the end. It is refreshing for a movie to take this route. As much as I have complained on the show about movies that are grim, I think it can be done right. And I think this movie does do it right because the whole journey, Jiangu's whole journey is tied back to the faith and trying to understand like why things are happening to the people who are important to you in your life. Like that's a very tough journey, and that's a very universal journey everyone deals with at some point. And sometimes it ends tragically. Like that's just reality. And to watch someone as real as him go through all that and in the end make the wrong decision and have to deal with tragedy, I think that's just, it just works. It's something that we can see and reflect back to ourselves and recognize.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara especially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Yeah, the power of that, as like supernatural and bizarre as this movie is, the way in which it embodies something very real that we experience and a very real like fear that people have of that loss of control of when it comes time to make a decision, like, are you making the right one or the wrong one? And how can you possibly know? There's a lot that resonates. And what you're saying too about like how this movie feels different with what Jiangu says at the end or does at the end, I just keep thinking about American horror and mm-hmm. how defined it is by the final girl. And it's not like we right. don't have horror movies that don't have tragic endings where the monster wins, but we kind of like don't like granted, I'm not as big, I'm sure that there's somebody that's just like,
Chris, screaming you idiot. At their iPods right now.
Yeah, there's like this movie, this movie, this movie, and this movie. Horror heads, I hear you. I know it's out there. Please recommend. But I think in terms of like mainstream, like movie theater horror that's coming out, a lot of the time. Yeah, Hereditary's one of the few that does it end with kind of the hero triumphant at all. And I guess a little bit with The Witch is another one that has more of the bleak ending. But that's some of the like the elevated like art horror that we've gotten in the last decade, as opposed to kind of the mainstream like not A24 movie horror that's been coming out over recent years.
Yeah, it's like the villain winning becomes more of like a philosophical statement that makes you think about like the whole journey of the movie and then like the aftermath of like what happens after you go on that journey.
Right, which is a huge difference between just like the entertainment value horror where it's just
like Scream.
Yeah, you get to have this person survive, so you feel like okay despite the like the scares, which makes it a little more like roller coastery than philosophical.
Yeah. I mean, they're surely those movies, horror movies are philosophical, but like I feel like what we're noting is like the ending, you know? Like what was it? I feel like you called it a philosophical ending when we were talking about when you wrote about the lobster.
Oh yeah.
And how absolutely. The end is like her just sitting in the restaurant, you don't know if Colin Farrell's gonna come back or not. Like that leaves you thinking about something. Like it's a movie that leaves you chewing on something as opposed to giving you something like completely resolved.
Yeah. And a lot of, I'm thinking of now as I make that statement, I'm also flashing back to some of the Paranormal Activity movies as well as Blair Witch. So
yeah, the demons win in that one, in those movies.
Yeah. Which, you know, team demon sometimes, absolutely. You know,
sometimes people need to be taught a lesson.
My goodness.
Not John Goo, though. That poor guy.
Yeah. Poor, like, the actor.
Oh, man.
Like, Kwok Duan just is so good.
Yeah.
The performance he gives is just so, so amazing. Like, everybody in the film's, like, impressive, but...
Oh, yeah. That daughter is crazy good.
I know, she's so terrifying. The fact that she's like so natural and sweet in the first like few bits of the movie, and then the looks the she's range. Giving by the end, she's just like,
I'm gonna watch her career. Holy shit.
Yeah, can we just give her an Academy Award? Like
seriously.
Because that is like a supporting role is fantastic.
I will say though, as much as I totally agree about the performances, especially Kwok Duan, like or however you say his name. I'm very sorry if I'm butchering it. I've always enjoyed this movie. Like, and I think a lot of that ties back to when you wrote about The Wailing at first, when we kind of agreed to write about it, and I was helping out a little bit and watching the movie along with you. I think I watched it twice, like right away, and was really into all the narrative threads that are being tied together in the movie. Like I love sitting down and trying to figure all that out. But I think in this last watch, what stuck out to me the most is I'm not super into the energy and flow of the movie as much as I appreciate like that it's a balanced movie and there's a lot of different parts like humor and horror and drama. I like all that. It is a little like static sometimes, which is probably a purposeful choice. I've seen a lot of South Korean movies that are like Burning, for instance, is like that. Yet Burning, I think, still has more energy somehow. Basically, I don't know if the movie always supports or accelerates his performance as much as I'd like it to. Like sometimes it does feel like it's just like a long shot of not a necessarily a long shot, but like he's kind of like far away in the frame, like giving like a riveting performance, and I'm just like, oh man, you got to get up in that shit, like you got to give me more of this guy. There are just a lot of moments like that in the movie that I noticed particularly this time that I thought that guy could have gotten a little more cinematic help, if you know what I mean.
Ooh. See, I like the wider...
It's a choice.
...shots. I'll go on record again. I've been on record before. I'm not a big fan of medium close-ups and close-ups.
You have said that.
Yeah. It's the thing that makes me think the Lord of the Rings movies aren't interesting, which is such...
Do you like, also think like every movie ever made isn't interesting?
Kind of. I mean, if they have... No, it's just like the over-reliance on that kind of shot when I think the movie calls for like some wider... I like more of a mix. Think that there was a time in like the 90s and 2000s, especially in American cinema, where like medium close-up and close-up were just like so overly used. And then recently, not recently, but maybe starting like mid-2000s, that started to change up a little bit. I just always think of the difference between the last few Pierce Brosnan, James Bonds, to Casino Royale. And like that switch from the medium close-up driven Hollywood blockbuster to the not medium close-up driven, more like not quite indie, but auteur style of Casino Royale, is much more what I dig.
I understand that. I mean, obviously, it's just a purely subjective, like, what you enjoy more. I have also gone on record, though, several times in this podcast and said, I don't care what way, shape, or form it's done. I just need it to be done well. So that's my only stipulation.
Yeah. See, I think too many medium close-ups is not done well.
I think if it flows, if it has energy, if it's part of the aesthetic, like, if all those things are lining up, I don't care what angle you're going at. Like, I just want to feel it.
You are much kinder than me. Actually, we're both like harsh in our own ways.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So I take that back.
You heard me bitch about Prisoners for an hour and a half.
Yeah. One thing you were saying earlier, there is like moments where this kind of like slows a little bit before it starts hitting the gas pedal again, whether that's like a choice or...
Yeah, it's the ebb and flow of the movie.
Yeah. But you were mentioning earlier about this idea of like the randomness of these things, like the fishing reference. Mm-hmm. And that was the thing that for people that haven't looked up this movie before or read our article about it, the writer-director, Na Hong-jin, he said that this movie was the byproduct of him losing several people who were very close to him in a short time frame, and none of them were through natural causes, which is like such a painful thing to hear described, because the implication of that is just... and it actually caused him to have like a huge crisis of faith, and this idea of death being indiscriminate and this thing that can just like visit and wreak havoc and leave you with all these questions and not having answers. And he decided to defamiliarize that through this movie and through the ghost inhabiting the Japanese man and the shaman and wondering why any of this is happening. And it's like, it kind of is out of your control. It is this indiscriminate thing. And we see not only that powerlessness that Jang-gu has to deal with, but that idea of choice that he's presented with, that feels, I think, ultimately a little ironic in that whatever he chose probably didn't matter.
Right.
I mean, maybe technically. We do get the implications, like when he runs back, we see the wilting of the flower that was hanging from the door that was causing protection. We do see the way in which the guards put up by the woman in white caused the shaman to like throw up like blood and like all of his guts essentially, and have to flee the area because those were her wards. But at the same time, the cross-cutting at the very end makes the implication that by the time Jang-gu gets home, his daughter had already murdered the family. It's not like as soon as he crosses the threshold, yeah. she lunges into action. Like his family was gone before he did that. And it still seemed like that was the tipping point. Not him leaving the woman in white, but him crossing the threshold of his family home and breaking the ward. So that, I think, was one of those things where it's like, oh, he could have prevented it. It's like, I don't know if he could have.
Oh, so you think the daughter had already killed everyone for sure?
I think so.
Okay.
Because the timing of that, yeah. if he like crosses in, I don't think she has like the time needed to like murder the mom and the grandma in the few seconds it takes for him to get through the gate into the room.
This is the difference between me and you watching a movie. I don't know. I don't think the timing really matters. Like, to me, it's just it's a creative choice. Like, it's just part of the aesthetic. Like, it's part of John Gu's journey of like, who does he put his faith in? He chooses the wrong thing, and because of it, this thing happens. I think the second you start putting it in like reality and time, like it would fall apart. But I choose to just ignore that and keep it into what the struggle is of the movie. And so in my mind, the second he crosses that barrier, then the daughter goes to town and chops everyone up.
I would argue it's not that the logic falls apart. It just changes from he had a choice to he doesn't. He didn't have a choice.
Like, but I don't think the movie is about he didn't have a choice. Like, that's so.
Yeah.
Like, right? the movie would just be like, everything's fucked and you have no control.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I just don't think the movie is really doing that the whole time. I think the movie is, we're watching Jiang Gu struggle through something and like, his faith being tested and him trying to choose who to choose. Like, that is the whole journey. For it to just end with like, it didn't matter what you did ever because you were always going to lose everyone you love. Like, I guess I wouldn't know what point this movie is really making. It would just be totally nihilism.
I mean, it would be making the point of just that journey that we think we have with control, ultimately to find out when it comes to like death, our control is very like lacking, mm-hmm. which yeah. is much bleaker of a statement. And I think, but that's also kind of, I think, the duality of why the ending is a little messy is not quite the right word, but I feel like so much of the movie is so careful to have that timing thrown off. There is either, it was just a way to get through what they were doing and they were hoping that people wouldn't be like me and be like, hey, wait a second. Mm-hmm. And still take it the way that you're saying to take it. Like, I think mm-hmm. that's a perfectly fine argument for it. I just think it is done in a way that leaves room for the much more nihilistic reading coming from somebody that has just suffered all of this grief and was trying to translate that grief and that pain into something.
I guess that is, as you describe it, that does make sense. Maybe I'll amend it to like, that's, it's not necessarily the movie isn't making a point, it's just making a point I might not be that interested in.
Yeah, because that's very different.
I guess that's true though. Like, this guy went through something very traumatic and made a movie to reflect it. Like, if this captures how he felt, like, about the world, about fate, about choice, I mean, so be it. I won't know that myself until I experience it.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, the idea that he does have a choice in the way in which you have these warring systems of belief telling you what to do and not knowing like which way to go, it puts the individual in such a state of flux and smallness, and the individual just wants to like have a good life, save their family, like have everything be okay. And the fact that you have to decide between this woman in white and what she's telling you and the shaman and what he's telling you and the implications of one belief system over another and feeling crushed between them. mm-hmm. is, I think, such an amazing point to reach.
Yeah. You are describing something, though, I wanted to talk about. Like, again, I like this movie. Like, I've always enjoyed it and feel a bit of a connection to it just because of what you wrote about it and how we worked together on it. I think the one thing that threw me off this time, I think this was probably my least enjoyable viewing. Because as somebody who's seen the movie a few times now and read what you wrote and really just knows the movie front and back and kind of understands all the little pieces happening throughout, it does kind of feel like a movie that's just building to a point that it's just building to this moment where Jiangu has to make a decision. I will say that the movie, again, it goes through a lot of ebbs and flows, a lot of slow moments. It really steeps in his character. And in a sense, I appreciate that. But I think the movie, I think what would have helped this time watching it through is if that choice that he faces at the end was a little bit more part of the movie throughout. Like, ultimately it is. Like, he chooses to choose trust the shaman, he chooses to distrust the stranger. Like, that's all there, but it's felt so heavily in those final moments, like whether to trust the woman in white or the shaman. Like, I just wish that energy had been there a little bit more throughout. Maybe the movie was a little shorter, more efficient, and like was just more energetic about that struggle Jiangu's facing, you know. Instead, like, I think it chooses to be more of just a character study and like build this character who then at the very end is forced to make a decision. Like, that's a choice, and I think that's cool. But I think personally I would have enjoyed it more if it was a little more flexible throughout, like had more character. I don't know how to describe it, but I just wish there was just more tension throughout, I guess.
Yeah, because the actual structure is such as it's bringing Jiangu to that moment of choice, but it's also essentially each scene is laying out some of the logic or foundation of what's happening, which means that as much as it's like it's still a story, but it's almost like seeing the assembly of each puzzle piece falling into place, or mm-hmm. each, like, okay, this scene is going to demonstrate that there's this aspect going on, and we need to have this aspect to set up this character moment, or to set up part of the conflict that Jiangu is going to face. Or, for example, like, he has to become unpure, right? He's a pure character until the moment that he hits the shaman, or not the shaman, the Japanese man with his car. And then at that point, not even when he hits him with the car, when they choose to throw the body over the edge of the road, now suddenly Jiangu's no longer pure. He's cursed, and that opens the door for everything else that's going to follow. But it's like you have to set everything up for that moment to where he makes that choice. And you could do it in a way that's just, as you're saying, a little more streamlined. When he first goes to the Japanese man's house, what if he just attacks him then? Mm-hmm. Or something happens then, and like you cut out 40 minutes of the movie. but is that realistic in that way? Do you want to have that like happen, so you have like the first encounter where it's just like a little more shy, the second encounter where there's a little more conflict, but they're both kind of standing their ground, and then the last encounter where they go and chase the guy and end up hitting him with the car and throwing him over the edge. So it's like it takes the time to set those things up, which mm-hmm. is something I very much appreciate.
Sure. Yeah.
But in the way in which we've talked about kind of that post cinema style of just kind of getting into things.
Yeah.
That setup might not be as appealing for you.
I mean, there's tension in what I'm saying, because I do like that the movie takes its time. Like, I don't necessarily need a movie to be like full throttle out of control, like constantly giving me information or anything. And I do like all of the things it's setting up throughout. Like you said, the puzzle pieces say it's setting up for it to all come together at the very end. For Jungkook to be sitting there thinking about everything he's learned throughout and like trying to make sense of it, like we're in the exact same position in that moment. Like the movie's cool in that way, that it becomes a big puzzle that we're trying to solve at the very end, and like you have a split second to make a decision. Like that's cool. But yeah, I you are right to point out that I do just appreciate efficiency. I can't help it. I mean, what do you want from me? I like a movie that's, like you said, like there could just be a more streamlined approach. Like, yeah, you can take that approach. Like he encounters the stranger like three times, and each of those scenes takes its sweet ass time because we want to sit there and like have Jungkook wonder if he's doing the right thing and like watch him go through the motions. And that all is part of like his character building. Like on paper, it all works. Maybe that's ultimately my point. Is like on paper, a lot of this movie works. But this particular watch, you know, this time, like for a 2-hour and 40-minute movie, I really felt the staticness this time. Like it just kind of struck me that in moments where like I knew what was happening and I knew what I was supposed to be getting from it, like it just kind of kept staying there and kept going at the same point and not really building the way I'd like. So efficiency is what strikes me as the thing that could improve this movie. But like you're pointing out, people like this kind of pace, so you know, it just suits a lot of people's what they want.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car, you should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
I think that's a thing that can happen with any movie that we start watching multiple times. Like, I loved The Dark Knight the first time I watched The Dark Knight. The first 5 times I watched The Dark Knight. And now, when I watch it, which happens, you know, every couple of years, it's not the same. Mm-hmm. Instead of just having those initial, like, in it for the highs, or just being able to be blown away by kind of the main points that it's wanting me to make, or that it's wanting to make and wanting me to kind of like take away the constructed feelings, I start looking at it in a way that I couldn't before because I'm so familiar with it, and then I start correcting it, and I start being like, well, I wish it would have done this, I wish it would have done that, like it's doing this thing and I don't really like this thing.
On the other side, I've watched a movie like Picnic at Hanging Rock 3 times now, I think, and that's a very slow movie, and like just people, like rich people in fancy dresses just like slowly moving around and like wandering and like looking into the sky and not doing anything, and I still eat that shit up. Like I to me, that pace is perfect for that movie. I think like so much is happening in those moments, so maybe if I watch this movie again, like I'd have a different take, but on this particular watch, I just kind of had that feeling of like I'm just sitting here like watching nothing really happening, and like I'm not getting the same thrust that I would be giving from another movie that's taken, like again, Burning. I think that movie works really well. Like I think the way it steeps in its moments, like there's so much interplay between the characters, there's so much tension in a way that's striking me more than it is in The Wailing.
It happens. What was your favorite, or what is your favorite part of the movie?
Really, Jiangu's whole struggle, the moment, just whatever the moment clicks for him, that he has to step up to save his daughter, like maybe the second time he visits the stranger, and he's like really getting in his face, and he's like, he's not going to take no for an answer. Like, he's going to threaten this guy. Like, he's going to scare him into like leaving her alone. There's just watching his whole reaction to wanting to save his daughter. Actually, I specifically the moment where he thinks he has saved his daughter and he visits her in the hospital. It's just like all of the motions he goes through with his daughter in particular. Like, I thought that all really hit. Again, I don't know if the filmmaker had always supported him, but I just thought like he was doing a great job, and I really felt like he was really delivering that aspect of the character storyline in a way that it always grabbed me.
It makes me wonder, this is your first time seeing the movie since becoming a parent.
Yeah.
Did that change the viewing? Were there anything that was more poignant, less poignant, more relatable, less relatable?
Yeah, I mean, I think I just felt it maybe a little bit more, like overall. I don't know if anything specific happened that would have changed, because my daughter's barely a year old. It's not exactly the same situation. The only thing I will say that stuck out to me this time is the fact that I didn't think the filmmaking was supporting it as much as I like. Because I am, like, we talked about Knock at the Cabin, you know, and that movie, like, I feel it. Like, that movie really, really struck me as a new parent. And I really felt in step with those characters, and they were trying to protect their daughter. This movie, all I could sense the whole time was like, I wish it was getting me more. Like, I wish I was pulled in a little bit more. But again, this actor is like, he's crushing it, man. So like, he kind of brought it for me. And like that moment in the hospital in particular, like, I loved. But yeah, that I would say that's more what I took away this viewing.
Okay. Okay.
How about you?
I think my favorite thing, so I have two. I think my favorite scene in the movie is definitely the last stretch, like the last few minutes, everything from last conversation with the woman in white through the priest going to the cave and seeing the shaman reveal himself, mm-hmm. or not the shaman, the stranger reveal himself as this demon. I still remember that first viewing, just going, is it going to go where I think it's going to go? Is it actually going to be that over the top,
yeah.
in a way? And that it went there made me so happy. And every time I watch it, I still get this sense of, I'm so happy it went there. So
it really does.
That is really, I think, a moment that I love. But there's more of a personal connection with when writing about this movie. I think I was the first person I saw in terms of the articles written trying to explain this movie that made the connection that the shaman's ceremony wasn't the thing that was affecting the Japanese man. It's cross-cut in a way that makes it seem like what the shaman's doing is affecting the Japanese man, but that they're actually two separate ceremonies that have nothing to do with one another. Mm-hmm. That the Japanese man's actually conducting a ceremony to get the ghost to leave the body of the Japanese man and temporarily possess the guy in the, is it Jung Bae, the guy that's in the truck,
mm-hmm.
in order to create, in order to trap Jiangu into killing the Japanese man,
right.
and thus taking an innocent life. So the shaman ritual is just strengthening what the demon's curse on the daughter, and the demon's doing something completely different, and that they're not connected, and sorting that out and realizing that's what was going on I was very proud of that. It's just one of my, like...
And I was proud of you.
Thank you. That was one of my things, like, ah, I am pretty good at this sometimes.
And that's a moment for me, too. Like, I complained about it in Prisoners, and, like, I think in general, maybe with a lot of mystery movies, it's something I'm not super interested in. Is like, as much as I can enjoy piecing together, like, the parts of a story and figuring out a mystery, I don't necessarily like when a movie is just that and it isn't properly bringing out something bigger, like some sort of ideology, bringing its themes forward, like really reflecting some ideas back onto you. If it feels stale in that sense, then I'm just kind of annoyed and bored by a mystery movie. But I think The Wailing does such a great job of, like, this whole scene you're talking about where cross-cutting between the shaman and the stranger and you thinking one thing leads to the other when in fact they have nothing to do with each other, that's a great thing on the director's part he's doing and including the audience in the movie. It is, like you said, a big puzzle. Like, we are being fed all of these different moments and being forced to consider who we trust and don't trust, like, what makes sense and doesn't make sense, like, what fits together and what doesn't have it to do with the other thing. Like, it's all part of the movie's construction and part of the movie's aesthetic. The aesthetic is ultimately, we don't know who to trust. Like, you're sitting there the whole time trying to piece it together alongside John Gu. And these scenes are a great example of that. That it isn't until the end, when you have that split second decision to decide, like, what to do, like, and you're thinking back to that moment, you're like, did they have anything to do with each other? Like, it's the director toying with you and, like, forcing you to figure it out. And I think that's a cool part of this movie, is that we are so included in that process.
That's a great point about the form and function of that, because somebody could argue, why don't you just make it clear? Why does it have to be that mysterious? Is it there something that takes away from us? No, that's a moment of form and function where
it's a choice.
Yeah, we need to be as uncertain about who is right, who is wrong, just like the enmeshed, entangled. We need to feel small compared to the forces at play,
right?
The same way that Jang-gu feels small compared to the forces at play. And aesthetic choices like that put us in that position.
Yeah. So definitely appreciate that about it. And just overall, like, it's also just fun to, like, try to figure all that stuff out. Like, when a movie confuses you that much and, like, you're trying to figure out, like, how it connects, and then having a moment like you had where you, like, finally figure out, like, oh, this is what it's doing, like, that's fun.
Yeah, it is. I think the only thing that I still, even on this watch, am a little like, what was going on there, is still when the woman in white chases the Japanese man and drives him to the cliff edge. Mm-hmm. That causes him to go down. It's almost like, even though she's in support of Jang-gu, that she also wants to bring him to the point of having to make the choice.
Right.
Or is part of some dance where, like, each are playing their part over this, like, the battle for this guy's soul and to see. So it's still, I feel like there's still something with her that's a little too vague.
Yeah.
We get so much information on the demon / Japanese man and the shaman. We get the implication that he's been captured in a sense by the demon. Like, when he tries to flee, all these strange things start happening to him. That's the demon being like, hey, you need to get back there. You need to finish this job. That the woman in white feels maybe a little underdeveloped.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was trying to say earlier, is like, this decision Jang-gu is confronted with at the end, like, I feel like the movie could have brought her in a little bit more and made, there could have just been more of a narrative drive towards that decision and for him to, like, be wondering, like, who to trust of, like, these three people, you know? But yeah, that moment where that, I feel like we talked about this at the time, because back when you were writing about this movie, I feel like we were talking about it a lot and, like, trying to figure things out. And I feel like one of the things we talked about is, while the woman in white is running through the woods, you're not really sure who's chasing who in that moment, or if anybody's chasing anybody, because if you think the woman in white is chasing the stranger, there is a moment where she turns around and looks over her shoulder, like she's being chased. So like, again, the movie's kind of toying with you and not letting you know what's happening, to the point where I don't think there's really an answer at all who's chasing who in that moment and why the stranger flies off the cliff. All we know is that he does, and because Jang-gu throws him off the side of the cliff, he commits a sin.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh. Yeah, her looking back over her shoulder gets me every
time. I know. Every time I see it, I'm like, oh, wait, no. What is happening here?
Yeah, she's chasing him. It also, that moment also reminds me of Tropical Malady a little bit. And that always makes me a little happy.
Absolutely. Any movie that has somebody wandering through a forest is an A+ in my book.
Yeah. Just, what a thing to do. But I'm glad this movie, shortly after we wrote about it, came out on Amazon Prime. And it seems like it's been out now on Amazon Prime for a few years, which I think is pretty great to see. I'm glad it continues to be one of our most popular articles. It seems to be a movie that's kind of entered cinema zeitgeist in a way, at least to some extent, that it's getting watched or searched. It seems a lot more than some other popular American movies that are now. Mm-hmm. I mean, this came out in 2016.
Yeah, it's got a bit of a cult following.
Yeah, 7 years. So this having like the cult following that it has, and the page views that we see from it aren't just coming from Korea, right? They're coming from all over the world. So I'm happy that this is having that attention.
Yeah, I mean, it must hit home, you know, like, I mean, 2016, obviously, South Korea has its own politics and issues, but 2016 just makes me think of Trump and the world being thrown a little bit into turmoil, like there being a bit more of a divide and a little bit more existential dread, like trying to figure out your place in the world and why things happen. Like, I think this movie just in general has a sense about the world and about living that probably just speaks to people in a certain way, that, you know, nothing's easy to figure out. You know, a lot of times nothing feels fair. Like, this movie just kind of has that energy and what it's like to live a painful existence.
Yeah. Well, that brings up two, which, I mean, we're kind of running out of time a little bit, but you mentioned Trump, and that had me thinking about the way in which this movie treats the other, the mm-hmm. outsider. And that was such, I mean, not, I don't think the director was channeling American politics and talking about this, but it's something that I think I've seen in Japanese cinema and video games, the idea of the Korean that's in the area and in the mix, and how they talk about Koreans in Japan. And mm-hmm. then the way in which this movie did the inverse, having this Japanese outsider to this town and the scrutiny he faces, the suspicion he faces. And then what's the film saying when he is a demon? Mm-hmm. There's a whole talking point and conversation around that I haven't seen much in the discussion about the movie. It seems on Reddit, the places that I've seen it discussed, the conversation tend to focus more on like what happened. Mm-hmm. But I'd be very curious to see or hear from others, like some of their thoughts on the way in which people reacted to kind of the outsider elements or the foreigner in our community elements that are part of this film.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Yeah, it's not necessarily that like we're trying to draw political lines around the director and like what he was trying to say, but it's just worth noting that like this movie does have such an audience, and this audience has it's been the last 7 years, like they're clearly reacting to something in that movie. I feel like all of these things just, they must speak to people.
Yeah. Where does it rank for you?
Ah, yes. I always forget we do this. let me pull them up. I can probably figure it out pretty quick.
Okay.
My all-time rankings. Do I have to explain the rankings every time in this show?
They're just from when we started ranking the ranking in July of 2022. So if we haven't seen it since July of 2022, it's not on the list.
All right. So I have 370-something movies on my list. It's probably up to 380, actually. I would put it in the... So as much as I enjoy this movie and have a connection with it, I can't deny that, like, stylistically, it's my kind of movie. For that reason... Not my kind of movie. So I probably have it, I'm looking at the list here, like in the 230-ish region.
Whew. I did not expect it to be down there.
So it's in the good section of my movies.
Okay. I mean, that's a lot of movies that are good and above.
Yeah, absolutely. I, as much as it sounds like I bitch and moan in this show, like I usually like most movies that I watch.
Yeah. I think you have more movies above. So my neutral, I've only ranked 109 movies. And my neutral category starts at 68. Mm-hmm. So, okay, that means I have 67 or 68 that are... So neutral starts at 69. So I have 68 that are, like, positive plus.
I would say we're in similar territory then.
Yeah, almost, like, 50 above. And there's not that many below. Like, my under neutral starts at... 85 or 86.
Mm-hmm.
With La La Land. But I may change this later, but in terms of me being somebody that really loves scope and scale,
and it definitely
Machinations, I think I'd probably put this right now at number 10.
Okay.
In the colossal category. So that's like the upper category top can be tier for me. Yeah, it's just below Bo is Afraid.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is The Wailing.
What's next?
I do believe we're talking about Under the Skin.
Under the Skin. That's right. Okay. Beautiful.
That's a movie, like The Wailing is one where I'm like, even if there are parts of it I don't enjoy, like, I respect it. I don't know if I quite respect Under the Skin.
Have you done the next watch of it
yet? I haven't. So I'm interested to watch it again. I've seen it twice now. Haven't liked it either time. Liked it a little less the second time. But, you know, that's the great part of rewatching movies is human beings just, they go up and down. We change constantly, and maybe I'm in a place now where I'll love this movie. We'll see.
I'm gonna convince you.
I doubt it, but okay.
All right.
Okay. Until then.
See ya. Bye. Got a big question to ask.